Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN, a special pledge edition. I'm Tom Hudson. That pledge line remains open during the roundup, 866-247-9576. Make your pledge now at 866-247-WLRN or look for the donate button at WLRN.org. A minivan was the scene late Monday night where two Miami-Dade police detectives found themselves under fire from an AK-47. Both officers were wounded but have since been released from the hospital. By Wednesday, a 19-year-old, Damian Thompson, was arrested and charged with two counts of attempted murder. Now, in the hours after the shooting, police, SWAT teams, and canine units combed through the Brownsville neighborhood of Miami, searching for suspects and clues. And then on Thursday afternoon, the mothers of kids who've been killed by gun violence gathered at nearby police station, pressuring police for developments in those unsolved murders. You can join the conversation on social media today for the Florida Roundup, Gun Violence in Miami. You can tweet us at WLRN or look for us on Facebook. Our guest, David Ovalle, the courts reporter for our partner, the Miami Herald, joins us in studio. Chuck Rabin covers the crime beat for our partner, the Miami Herald, with us from our studios in Doral. Chuck, let me start with this. What do we know what happened late Monday night?
We know that two detectives, Charles Woods and Terrence White, had been in an unmarked car, that gray caravan, went into the Annie Coleman Projects, which is in Brownsville, just west of Liberty City. I was told today they were actually working on a recent homicide. And as they got in there, the power had been cut about half an hour before. It was dark. And they saw a group of people, probably 4 to 6 people. One of them passed them, came back, and just opened fire on them.
Power was cut. Was this an accident, or was this something?
They don't know. All we know is that a transformer blew out at about 9:30 that night.
And do you know the type? So you mentioned they were there, plain clothed, right? They weren't
wearing
uniform, and it was an unmarked car.
Blue jeans and T-shirts.
And the case they were on, any kind of related homicide? Do you know anything more about that?
I don't. I just learned that today.
Okay.
We were told beforehand that they were, David could help with this. They were looking for, I guess, drugs, guns, whatever.
That's what we had thought. David Ovalle, your colleague covering the courts, we had been told earlier they were there on some kind of type of vice duty. Is that right, David?
I'm not sure so much vice duty, but they're part of a homicide initiative, so it's sort of like a proactive thing where they're out there looking for, for guns and for drugs, and it's all sort of as they're trying to combat and also get intelligence for a lot of the different shootings, homicides included, that have really plagued that neighborhood over the last couple of years.
So Monday night, this scenario, Chuck, as you laid out, happens. The 19 shots, I believe, were absorbed by the minivan. Do we know how many of those were by the accused shooter and how many of them could have been return fire by the officers?
I think we know for certain that they fired at least 9. Is that right, David? And then that the officers were responsible for some of the bullets coming out the front windshield.
That's correct. Yeah, at least 8 AK-47 or rifle bullets hit the minivan. If you look at the pictures and you see the photos of the holes coming out of in the windshield. That's actually from one of the detectives inside firing through the windshield at the gunman.
The shooter shot up the passenger side and blew out the passenger window.
Gotcha. So the shooter was on the passenger side, the detectives inside the driver's side and the passenger side. One of those shot out. Immediately call for help, right, Chuck? Officers come in. The two officers involved in the shooting in the minivan were loaded onto a pickup truck, taken to the trauma center. What happened next? What was the police response in the immediate aftermath?
They flooded the streets around the area. They went door to door and were banging on everything. They considered it a public safety threat because this guy was still loose.
So is there precedent for that?
It's not unusual in most shootings. If there's an active shooter and they're concerned it was... You know, it's basically depends on the randomness of it, or whether, you know, someone was targeted, they feel like.
You use that phrase active shooter. That's a phrase that a lot of us, unfortunately, have gotten to know over the course of the past several years, certainly here in Florida with the Orlando situation and, of course, in January, the Fort Lauderdale airport situation. Was this considered that kind of scenario?
Well, they don't know. I mean, we're not even certain at this point that the person who shot up the van knew they were police officers.
Yeah.
So there was no way to say, you know, I mean, obviously they were targeting that car then, but, you know, nobody really knew what was going on.
So David Ovalle with the Miami Herald, what do we know about the accused shooter, this 19-year-old Damian Thompson?
Well, Damian is someone, at least for the police, that's pretty well known in the Annie Coleman projects, which colloquially there is known as the PSU projects. He'd been looked at for other crimes as well. And, you know, it's basically they believe he's an associate of a gang there called the 13th Avenue Hot Boys. And that's a group that's been feuding with another group for years. I mean, Chuck and I have both written stories about many of the shootings that have stemmed from these two groups. And he's a 19-year-old. He only had one gun charge that he was in his past. So back in January, he was arrested. But here was the key thing. He was actually arrested by one of the detectives who was shot. So that detective was able to identify him, as the shooter.
And Chuck, you described kind of the aftermath of law enforcement swarming the area. It wasn't until, David, I believe the next morning, that officers acting upon a tip found the 19-year-old, found the accused shooter. Is that right?
Right. The homicide detectives tracked him to the Hyatt Plaza near the airport, and they found him there. And one of the interesting things to come out of it is that, they claim that he resisted and that he was punching some of the officers and hiding under the bed and cursing and yelling. And so and of course, then they responded, they said, with punches. And so if you see his mugshot and you see his appearance in bond court, his whole left side, left eye and left is swollen shut.
His jaw is swollen on his left side, his eye is swollen shut.
Yeah. And so I'm sure for his lawyer down the road, that's going to be a concern and will probably result in some complaints.
So that was kind of how he was injured. Chuck, what's the latest on the investigation? Do police are still investigating potentially this group of people that may have walked by the van prior to the shooting?
I'm sure they're questioning them. I haven't heard anything about another shooter. Maybe David's heard something recently. I think it's just, you know, there has been a spike in shootings in that neighborhood in the past 3 weeks or so. And that's basically what they're looking into at this point.
And any sense of perhaps what has led to this spike in shootings and if they are random in nature or is it gang activity?
They said as late as this morning when I was speaking to some folks that it was no different than what's been going on for the past couple of years. It's just a group of relatively young kids who start beefing with each other for whatever reason. It could be over social media, it could be a girl, it could be drugs, it could be anything, and tempers flare and they just go after each other.
David, you're hearing the same kind of things from your sources?
Yeah, and this is, it's sort of this perpetual cycle where you get some of these young kids who are, and now I guess sort of the interesting twist is now a lot of this is playing out over social media. So
yeah.
I know it's particular with these groups, the prosecutors and the police detectives are constantly issuing warrants to get their Facebook Live feeds, to get their social media imprints, because a lot of these beefs are now playing out over social media and Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat. And it's interesting twist to really a problem that's been going on for years.
And are they doing that for preventative measures or collecting evidence after the fact?
Both. I think both, because I think they believe that if they're able to sort of nip some of these shootings in the bud, then they can sort of prevent future homicides.
Talking about the ambush shooting of two Miami-Dade plainclothes detectives Monday night in the Brownsville neighborhood in Miami. Last speaking there was David Ovalle, the courts reporter for the Miami Herald. Chuck Rabin covers crime for our partner, the Miami Herald. Chuck is in our Doral studios. Chuck, what about the firearms used here, this AK-47? Have you been able to discern any kind of source of where that came from and how this 19-year-old got in possession of it?
I haven't heard where it came from, but they're not all that unpopular on the street. I mean, it's easy to get weapons.
What about the supply of firearms? When you talk, Chuck, you and David are experienced reporters here in this area, and you mentioned you've been writing stories about these kinds of incidents for many years. What about the supply of firearms like this kind of rifle?
It's fairly abundant, and if you speak to people about it, they say a lot of it is coming in over borders, and And, you know, the laws in the country don't help the situation. David may have something to add to that as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the efforts that that the police as well as the state attorney's office have been making is to try to do a more comprehensive comprehensive research on the bullets being fired, so tracing these guns, and not just for homicides but other shootings as well, because what happens is on the streets a lot of these guns get passed around.
Right.
So you may find someone that's in possession of a particular firearm, but that doesn't mean that they didn't, you know, get it from somebody else who used it in a shooting, you know, previous to that. So a lot of these guns get passed around on the streets and get sold or just, you know, lent out.
So that kind of investigatory work is going to lead to the ability of tracing a specific bullet to a specific firearm. Is there much law enforcement effort focused on the acquisition of the firearms themselves, or a prosecutorial interest in going after the supply?
I believe so, but it's very hard, a lot of that, because you know, some of that's going to have to do with the feds as well. You know, mm-hmm. ATF is very, very involved in these types of cases. But a lot of times these firearms have just been floating around on the streets for a long time. So it's not necessary, you know, it's not easy to trace, you know, where they came back from or if they were stolen. A lot of these guns end up being stolen from yeah. private owners.
It's like a hot potato thing, you know. I'm done here, and it's being tossed and passed on to the next person.
But Chuck, you've been a longtime police reporter. Are the questions being asked in the investigation about tracing the ownership isn't quite the right word, but the possession of these firearms back to the source and how they're getting into the community in the first place?
Yeah, that's always important, and yeah. it's always looked at. But as David said, it's a really difficult thing to do.
And then, you know, as evidence of this gun play and body count, we had a group of mothers go to Northside Police Station and essentially express support for the police officers, but also express a desire on the part of police for justice for their children who have been murdered by firearms in the general area, and looking for justice here. David, what point are they trying to make, and what could be the response to look from police detectives?
Well, it's a complaint that's you know, been around for a long time, that, you know, the police detectives aren't paying enough attention or doing enough to try to solve a lot of the shootings in the inner city. And a lot of that has to do with you know, clearance rates. You can look at the clearance rates, and they make very few arrests on a lot of the shootings in which someone isn't killed.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult, but it's a difficult balance, because a lot of times in these communities, in Liberty City and Brownsville where this happened, you don't have witnesses that come forward. People don't want to help. So it becomes this sort, and there's also this no snitch mentality that, you know, a lot of people would prefer to, you know, so if their loved one gets shot, they'd rather just go out and take justice for themselves and not cooperate with the police. So it's, you know, it's a very tricky balance that the police and the prosecutors have in trying to solve these cases, and also respond to the complaints that not enough's being done.
Chuck, you've looked into those clearance rates. Talk to us about that, and talk to us again about that. That response to this police shooting, the shooting of the officers, and how that compares and contrasts to similar types of dual shootings of private citizens.
I was out there last night, and, you know, they've got their concerns are real, but, you know, the police will swear to you up and down that, you know, there was no special treatment in trying to find the guys who, or whoever it is that shot the officers,
yeah.
That the you know, they were out in the streets that night because they were worried about the community. It was a public safety issue. And that in the following time, all the paperwork and the phone records and everything they looked into was done by no more than would be done for, you know, the mother of Jada Page, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's what they say. As for what was the other question? That you
In terms of the clearance rates, you know, is some of the issue of these open cases of Jada Page and others.
The rates fluctuate. You know, depending on, I mean, there's a flurry. You know, there's activity like now that's going on in the Brownsville neighborhood. They're generally in the 30-40% range. David, is that pretty accurate for most?
Yeah, I think on some of the attempted murders or the ag assaults, it can be a little bit lower. It can be down in the 20s.
Aggravated.
It's actually crept up a bit because there's been a lot more manpower allocated to solving a lot of the shootings that in which no one dies, but it's still relatively low.
David, what's next for the accused shooter here, Mr. Thompson?
Well, he'll be up for arraignment in a couple weeks. As of right now, he's not charged. He's charged with 2 counts of attempted murder, but not on a law enforcement officer, because I think they need to prove that he knew that they were detectives when he opened fire. But as of right now, it's just 2 counts of attempted murder. So he'll go and it'll start the discovery process. And he was actually in court today, and they're holding him no bond on the underlying case that he had from January, the gun case.
David Ovalle, courts reporter for our partner, the Miami Herald. Great to see you, David. Thanks so much for sharing your experience with us. Chuck Rabin, you stick around. We want to talk about the aftermath of Ultra and how things changed this year compared to years past. Also still to come on this pledge edition of the Florida Roundup, a Miami ballerina says goodbye. That's all next.